Hey everyone, Chat Cemetery is back. I'm your host, Deanna Chapman, and today I am joined once again by Drew Deitch, and we are talking about something a little different today, but still very king, very on topic, and that is Just Desserts, the making of Creepshow. Drew, I had no idea this existed until I was sort of going through and looking for some sort of fun little outside things that I could cover on the podcast that were still King adjacent. And this came up and you were immediately like, I will talk about this with you because you're the Creepshow guy.
I am. Yeah, that is a label I wear proudly. And it's interesting because this as a documentary, I had seen it before years ago because it was, I think its original release was part of a UK special edition DVD of Creepshow. And that was just a special feature on, because this comes back from the great days of actual making of documentaries on home video, you know, being a selling point, especially for collectors.
Yeah.
And that was this documentary. But then when Creepshow got re-released on Blu-ray through Scream Factory, this was not part of it. And it was not part of that set. I'm like, oh, man, that documentary, it's the making of documentary. They made it, I think it was 25 years later. So it's also something of a anniversary retrospective and things like that.
Yeah, I think it was 2007. Which tracks.
Yep.
That's how math works.
Yep.
And, you know, I didn't know about this, like I said, so I just watched it for the first time the day before we recorded this episode, and just seeing George Romero and those iconic glasses, loved the glasses, and just hearing him talk about things like the fact that Creepshow wasn't even the first thing they had discussed working together on, him and King.
No.
They actually talked about Salem's Lot and...
That's it, yep.
The Stand came up. I think he was saying that King signed a copy of The Stand for him and said, you know, maybe someday we can do this one. But those things sort of got tossed out when the studio decided to do Salem's Lot as a TV series. And obviously we then know The Stand ended up being a 1994 TV series and... later, another TV series that we will not speak of, but that's okay.
I mean, that that's why I love making of documentaries and learning about, you know, projects that these people were a part of that, you know, often never happen, or how I'm a big fan of the very early stages of when a movie becomes what it's going to become.
You know,
getting the parts together. And yeah, I mean, it's just great seeing George Romero. I still miss him. He's one of my absolute favorite filmmakers. And you can tell on this documentary, Just Desserts, that if you know a little about Romero's history, this was really the first time he had even a remotely sizable budget. And it was still a very low budget movie, but this was the first time he had a real budget to work with, you know, with his crew out there in Pittsburgh. And, you know, funny enough, while this is a Warner Brothers movie and distributed by them, it wasn't made by them. It wasn't, it's an independent production. And in that sense, they got to at least kind of chase the particular idea that they were after, which is, hey, let's make an ode to all these old EC comics. And in doing so means, you know, having visual comic book motifs and vignettes and stuff like that. And, you know, you can go listen to our Creepshow episode here on Chat Cemetery about it. But I love that it does seem, at least from the people they interviewed, that this seemed to be a pretty fun project to work on. I mean, like every movie is hell, like in terms of working, but some are much less hell than others. And it seems like people had a real good time making Creepshow.
Yeah. And I think at least on the cast level, because it's anthology based, you know, they're not filming stuff for an hour and a half movie. They're filming, you know, 20 minute segments. And just the fact that Ed Harris was on this documentary and was like, yeah, George just kind of called me up and I said, sure, George, I'll come. It's yep. like he was actually cast in this, you know, he didn't have to audition or anything. And just the way that he was talking about Ted Danson and, you know, there are so many now familiar faces to us in this. You have Adrian Barbeau, who has been in tons of sort of, you know, quirky roles over the years. And I really just loved the sort of playful approach it seems like everyone took to this. And mm-hmm. it wasn't super strict, because at one point Adrian was like, yeah, I didn't really have any direction. I just kept going with what felt right. And I think Ed Harris said the same thing. He was like, I just kind of remember a tombstone falling on me.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely has that aura of what I love about independent filmmaking, which is like, we're all yeah. just getting together to to make a good movie, but to have a good time. And obviously a lot of the actors that are in the movie were, you know, had passed away by the time they made the documentary, so they don't have yeah. their perspective. But it also seems like, hey, I mean, and this is something I love about Creepshow and this kind of stuff in general, is it's like, yeah, it was notable, noteworthy, talented people coming in to make, you know, what is essentially trashy, pulpy horror. Mm-hmm. But taking it seriously. I mean, like, you know, Romero says that a couple times in the documentary, that when they got, you know, big talent like E.G. Marshall or Vivica Lindfors, that they saw that, hey, we're really, you know, making this material serious. Like, we care about it, but, you know, we're not taking it so serious that, you know, we don't understand the fun of everything. And then I think one of the biggest assets to the Just Desserts documentary is that Tom Savini was filming a lot of backstage stuff. Mm-hmm. And so if you get the Just Desserts Blu-ray, there is a section that is just a compilation of some of his behind the scenes filming.
Yeah.
And Tom, and I mean, this is obviously, George Romero's direction, Stephen King writing, but I think, especially from the documentary's point of view, this is about showing off Tom Savini as, you know, the creature maker, the real monster maestro, you know, because he talks about it, and he's talked about it in plenty of times, where this movie was the chance for him to show that he could make monsters and not just make gore effects, which is what he was known for. And so we get, you know, it's perfectly segmented, you know, every segment that they do, where it's like, okay, if we do cast, you know, here's the section on casting. We'll go through each
yeah.
story and kind of highlight the main cast members. When we get to the effect stuff, we'll go through each story and, you know, highlight that stuff. The big missing component, I would say, to the documentary is that they were not able to get Stephen King.
Yeah.
To talk about it. I know he doesn't seem to have any hold any ill will or anything towards Creepshow, other than apparently infamously his own acting, which I defend. Me and George Romero defend
yeah.
Stephen King's acting as Jordy Verrill.
It was perfectly camp for that segment.
Oh, yeah. Well, and you know, Romero goes into it where he's like, you know, oh, it came out and, you know, critics said it wasn't a subtle performance. He's like, it's not supposed to be subtle. What are you talking about? He says the only direction I gave him was play it like the Roadrunner in the old cartoons.
That was such a great moment. And I did buy the Blu-ray for this, but I didn't go through all of those bonus things because I was like, all right, I'm going to leave the house, go see some other movies today too. So I didn't know quite how long that was going to take me. So I have that stuff banked for later, you know, maybe I'll do a Creepshow rewatch and then watch the bonus stuff after. But
yeah, there's fun stuff in there. I mean, the big thing is the documentary, is the feature documentary. That's the thing, to watch.
And it's about an hour and 39 minutes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the fascinating things they went over was all of the roaches, because
that
whole segment. And I was like, when I first watched Creepshow, and we may have talked about this on the episode, it was so long ago now, please forgive me for not remembering, but,
of course,
you know, we knew, I'm pretty sure, that those were all real. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, how did they not get those everywhere, wherever they were, you know, like in the studio?
A spoiler alert, they went everywhere.
They went everywhere. They go over that, and they had like this Vaseline trick that was supposed to work, where
yeah.
they put it all up around the top of the set. and they were supposed to just slide down. And it's like, well, clearly you needed a few more tubs of Vaseline.
Well, yeah, I think it's John Harrison, who was the first AD and composer, tells that story about like, oh, don't worry, yeah. we'll line the tops of the wall with Vaseline and they won't be able to get past it. And the first time they opened up the roaches, they got to that line of Vaseline and just walked right over it like it was nothing and went into the building. And, yep. There's what's great about the production of that, because this is not something that should ever be repeated or anything, is that because they did that, there was then urban legends about, if you took a wardrobe chest or something from the set, you brought these Trinidadian cockroaches to you on another show. Because they were hiding everywhere. Because one of the like grips or somebody tells a story about they had to return a scissor lift and they were, going through these walls and trying to clean out, looking for the roaches. And they saw roaches and Roach just, immediately zoop went right onto the scissor lift and disappeared. And the guy shows up like, all right, you need this scissor lift anymore? And the grip is like, yeah, it's good. You go ahead and take it. It's like, I can't, tear this thing apart looking for this roach. There's tons of stories about that. The one that's like the creepiest image to me is George Romero talking about, you hit the light and they scatter and then they're gone. You cannot find them. And he said, we'd do a take, scatter the roach, hit the light. And then when we go looking for them, they'd have a little, old touch type telephone and they'd unscrew the telephone and there was just a mound of roaches in the shape of the telephone mold.
Yep.
I'm just like, oh my God, that's so scary and disgusting.
You're just like, they can literally fit through anything. It is wild. And, you can't unsee that entire segment and you really cannot unsee just them pouring the buckets of them out.
Well, the big, cause I mean, what's in the movie they captured and is phenomenal and gross and traumatizing, but there's a shot of when the roaches are supposed to come through E.G. Marshall's mouth, there's a take that they weren't able to use because originally they were like, okay, the first time we did it, we had them, we had these roaches essentially in like a tube that they were trying to, push them through the mouth of this puppet, and the roaches just molded together. So there's this giant roach lump that's coming, that's trying to come out of E.G. Marshall's dummy head, and is not, it's the grossest, it's grosser than anything in the finished movie.
Yeah.
Like, but it's a failed take where it is just this giant roach mound stuck in this puppet's mouth. It's like, oh, like I'm not like phobic of roaches or anything, but I looked at that, it's like, oh, that is disgusting. You'll see that in this documentary. So,
if you want to, you could also entirely skip that section.
The magic of movie making, folks. I've always loved, particularly when it comes to horror and horror being my favorite genre. When it comes to movies, that also means that, well, horror is often an effects driven genre. And, before you could do anything with a computer, you could animate anything. You used to have to figure out, well, how are we going to make this gag work on camera? And so I love all that kind of little problem solving that, like with the roaches, they talk about, Tom Savini talks about, like, how am I going to get the roaches to burst through the chest of this latex dummy? And the solution being like, oh, you just, get some toilet paper and, paint it and, they'll be able to rip through the toilet paper like nothing. And it's like, oh, that, that's the magic of like when you're watching the movie, you're not thinking about, well, that's toilet paper painted. It's like, oh, no, it's E.G. Marshall's chest being bursted open by roaches. So I love all that kind of behind the scenes stuff, like the whole crate section and seeing, just how detailed, making Fluffy was, and Tom Savini's anecdote about calling Rob Bottin, another effects wizard, people probably best know for The Thing, John Carpenter's The Thing, and saying like, oh, yeah, I was on the phone for an hour and a half with Rob Bottin giving me step-by-step instructions on how to build this, you know, fiberglass head and mold and stuff for Fluffy.
Mm-hmm.
I love that stuff. You know, it's like,
same.
You know, the making of, and while they're still making of stuff that they do for movies nowadays, it's not that interesting because it's literally just like, all right, watch the green screen go away as we animate this thing. And it's like, I'm not trying to down on the, you know, technical skill and everything that requires, but it's not as interesting as like watching a roach mound get stuck in E.G. Marshall's puppet mouth, you know, because they're trying to get this effect off.
Yeah. I think a lot of the older movies for sure benefit more from stuff like this. So like, you know, the early Friday the 13th stuff and basically anything that doesn't have like a huge reliance on CGI. Not that, like you said, I don't want to downplay the technical side of that. And, you know, as someone who's been getting into doing videos more, it's cool to see that stuff too for me personally. But I get that practical effects are always sort of the thing that people want to see the magic of. And
yeah, that's the word, I think, is because I equate any practical in-camera effect to a magic trick. Like, that's what a magic trick is. It's using the productions of show business to trick you into believing you're seeing something that actually is fabricated or is, you know, not there. And, you know, with Creepshow being such a monster heavy, effects heavy production, it's really cool to see this stuff behind the scenes. And, you know, just lightheartedly too, like there's a section where Ted Danson and Galen Ross, who are in the Something to Tide You Over section, we get to see them in makeup and they're doing their lines in these like Southern hillbilly accents and cracking everybody up. I watched the, like I said, I watched the actual Tom Savini pieces, and there's a little bit more with Stephen King.
Okay.
Where he's getting, you know, makeup tests and stuff for him. And, you know, they're just backstage chatting. And it's like, right. Oh, it's just chatting with Stephen King. And I do love Tom Savini's description of Stephen King. It's like he was a 13-year-old boy. He talked like a 13-year-old boy. All he wanted to talk about was comic books and stuff like that. I'm like, yeah, that's our guy.
Yeah.
It's like just a big dork.
For sure. And like I said, it's just so cool to see the magic behind these things. And, you know, I was watching a video a few weeks back. Apple teamed up with Skywalker Sound to do a video, and it kind of runs through how they do a lot of the Foley effects.
Okay, yeah.
And obviously, as someone in audio, I absolutely loved watching that. But it's like, you know, they were talking about stuff that they did not only for Star Wars, but like how they made the T-Rex sound.
Mm-hmm.
In Jurassic Park. And that stuff is just so fascinating to me. And Drew, you probably know this, and I'm sure some of the listeners do too, but I have so many like making of and art of books because I love this stuff so much. So I have like the making of Alien. I have, I think, almost all of the Star Wars ones that you can get minus the prequels.
Mm-hmm.
I have like Into the Spider-Verse, which obviously...
Cool.
Into the Spider-Verse is very different because it is animated, and I have, you know, Toy Story 4 and Coco. But in that respect, I think that's where I love the making of the technical stuff, is when it's animation, because it's just a whole different beast, even in comparison to CGI, honestly, and practical stuff. But yeah, I would probably rank my interest in making of stuff with the practical stuff first, animation, and then your everyday making of CGI, normal shooting stuff.
Yeah, I mean that's just effect stuff. Like I said, you know, I was lucky enough to grow up during the DVD boom, and it really was, you know, our friend and Chat Cemetery guest Travis Newton has written about this, about how when DVD came out, one of the ways it was, you know, sold itself over VHS was, hey, well, you don't just get the movie, because we had now all of this data available on this disc. We can throw a whole bunch of other stuff on there. So we'll throw on deleted scenes, and, you know, we will commission somebody to make a making of documentary for these. And what happened was it put forward this idea that people wanted to buy movies not just to watch the movie, but because they would get more information about how the movie was made. And for some of these making of productions, they weren't as we call them EPKs, electronic press kits. They weren't just another arm of the marketing department, essentially. They were real, actual, hey, we're going to film how this movie got made. Yeah. And, you know, you bring up Alien, and I cannot recommend more highly the documentaries on the first four Alien movies. When they hit DVD and eventually Blu-ray, they ported them over. They are exhaustive, in-depth, warts and all, you know, making ofs to from every facet of the production. So much of that really was a kind of film school for me growing up. Like it's like, yeah. I know, you can read about making of movies and classic, you know, legendary making of stuff like The Wizard of Oz or Jaws, like stuff like that. But these documentaries really allowed for there to be a very open kind of approach to, hey, we're going to show you how movies get made. And sometimes it's not pretty, you know, but that's part of it.
Yeah.
And this Just Desserts documentary, it's like, yeah, like, you know, again, they have the benefit of they made their movie 25 years ago, so they can, you know, right. reminisce a little bit more and things like that. But still,
hindsight, all yeah, that fun stuff.
Oh, of course. Yes. But still, I think it's something that I just don't see as encouraged in the kind of modern film media landscape in terms of like, hey, no, like actually documenting how this got made, letting people reflect, letting people be open, you know, not just trying to get, you know, press quips essentially from interviews to say, you know, because they do that kind of stuff for every big tentpole production, but it's, you know, you'll see them sitting in the chair and they'll cut to Idris Elba saying like, it's going to be a wild ride, you know, something like that. It's like, oh, well, that's not making of, that's just marketing. And so like with something like Just Desserts, it's like, yeah, you get to really see how a movie like this came together. And I always like, and it's interesting. I like the making of parts, but I'm usually more intrigued by the very early stages of a project's development. And mm-hmm. then when it releases and kind of what, you know, what the response was to it. You know, because they have a section in this where the producer, Richard Rubenstein, is talking about, yeah, to sell our film, like we took out, you know, a 2-page ad in the New York Times and, what you know, we had a screening at Cannes, but then we went around and just stuck that copy of the New York Times ad under every door in Cannes, hoping somebody would, you know, it's like, I like the, how do we get our, not, you know, it's like, okay, the movie's made, how do we get our movie seen? Because that's a whole nother struggle.
Yeah, and we see a lot of stuff come through the festival circuits these days, but I would still love to know that part too, or even just like the writing process. They did touch on that a little bit where, mm-hmm. you know, they were like, King said he would have it in 60 days. It was done in 60 days.
Again, Rubenstein is like, I found out exactly how Stephen King works when we started Creepshow in terms of his process. Like he calculated exactly how much time that it would take for him to do that. And the number he came up with was 60 days. And on 60 days, he delivered the script.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, wild. I mean, obviously, they touched on, we talked about it in our episode, I'm sure, about how three of the stories were already short stories that he had written, that mm-hmm. he just adapted. And then the other two, Father's Day and They're Creeping Up on You, were original stories. Because I love that kind of stuff. Like you said, the way George Romero met Stephen King was that the studio put them together for Salem's Lot. And George Romero was like, yeah, so, you know, we meet and have lunch. And he's like, we talked a little bit about Salem's Lot, like, you know, we were supposed to, but really we ended up talking about a whole bunch of other stuff and really connecting and being like, you know, hey, you know, maybe we're not going to make the Salem's Lot thing, but, you know, stay in touch and we would love to work together, which they did a couple times. And so, yeah, I mean, that's the one thing, if I was going to take one knock off of this documentary, is like, yeah, I'd love to hear King in these segments, like talking in the same way everybody else is talking about the movie, and get more of his perspective, not just as an actor, because that's obviously a big focus, but to see, it's like, okay, like, yeah, I always love hearing, how did you kind of stumble upon this particular premise or idea for the story? So I wish Stephen King was in the documentary as another talking head. That's the one knock I have to give against it. But otherwise, I think this is a really fun documentary for a really fun movie. Certainly one that I wish this kind of stuff would be the standard for, you know, these kinds of movies, you know, getting people together and just being open about like, this is how we did it, warts and all. I think the documentary maintains a pretty fun sense of humor about itself. In the interviews and stuff, it ends on a bit of a sad note for me because they, you know, talk about the movie's release and how it was successful. And, you know, George Romero's like, it's the only time I ever had a movie hit number one at the box office.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, man. And then he talks about like, I'd love to be making Creepshow 7 right now. And it's like, oh, it's like, you know, he didn't live long enough to see the show happen.
Right.
You know, he didn't get to be involved with that because he's like, I love it. He's like, I love the EC comics. I love doing that stuff. I would be doing it today if they'd let me, you know. So on that note, it ends kind of sad because obviously he's no longer with us. But at least like the clear love that he had for this project is well documented in Just Desserts. And if you just want it for that reason alone, I think it's a worthy documentary to check out.
I 100% agree. I had a lot of fun watching this. I'm glad it exists and that you can get a Blu-ray of it because I was kind of surprised. I ended up buying my copy from Target because Target somehow had it in stock, but some other places didn't. So I wasn't going to complain. And I got it for free, technically, because they were doing a buy two, get one free sale.
There you go. Nice.
It worked out nicely for me because I picked up a couple other things. And, you know, this was just like a fun little bonus for both me and this podcast. So, Drew, thank you so much for volunteering to talk about it.
Absolutely.
I will try to find a link to put in the show notes. So if anyone else wants to pick up a copy, they can. I might try to put a few in there because I think you can get it on Amazon still. It might be a little more. I'm not sure. I'll double check on that. But yeah, if you're a fan of Creepshow, I feel like this isn't necessarily a must watch, but if you're into making of stuff like Drew and I are, definitely check it out.
Absolutely. And thanks as always. And I'm sure we'll have some more Creepshow stuff for me to talk about in the future.
Yes, we will. Come August, we will have the Making of Creepshow 2 book coming out, which I just found out about recently too. And it's kind of timely because, as I'm sure you can all tell, the content train has slowed down a little bit.
Well, you know, when it comes out, just shine my signal in the sky and I will be there for some Creepshow discussion.
Yeah, we could also fill it in with the Creepshows book in the meantime too.
That's true.
It's not 100% Creepshow, but you know, we got some options.
Absolutely. And I can look at that book right now on my bookshelf. So yep, it's there. So
same.
But no, always love coming on here and looking forward to our next discussion, Deanna.
Me too.